Well, it's nice of Richard C. Hoagland to join us. We'll be back in a moment with our two special guests tonight, George Haas, William Saunders, and now you, your phone calls, your questions. And their book, of course, is called The Cydonia Codex. I wish, if I were an astronaut, I'd love to go to Mars, and that's the region I'd want to go. And I'm convinced, you know, when you see those old movies, that there's something there, probably structures, the doors open. And you go, and you'll find the Hall of Records of Mars. You never know. Back in a moment. There's a picture in your book, George and William, of what you call the Martian tiger, the water lily jaguar. And also, you know, if you look at it in a different perspective, you know, to each his eye, right? To me, it looks like an angel with its wings spread out. On the 6.14B, do you see that picture?
I'm just finding it.
Okay.
I know which one
you're talking about, the water lily jaguar?
Yes. Also called the Martian tiger. 6.14B, it's on page 136 of your book. I mean, that could to some people who have a different perspective, looks like an angel with its wings out, doesn't it?
Well, I'm so used to looking at it as a tiger, I have a hard time seeing anything else. So.
All right, nobody in our listening audience to that extent has your book, and we don't have that image, so I guess I can't pull my...
All listeners, please go to page 136.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice, huh?
But what you're saying, George, is something that George and I ran across when we first started to look at these structures, is that we were at times seeing different things, and we were, you know, each of us being certain that we were seeing something different, and... that's the nature of these structures, because there are images within images, and some of them overlap different angles, and so it's hard to, you know, sometimes hard to determine exactly what is supposed to be represented.
How did you agree on certain images? How did that happen?
Well, basically, it was very often that we saw the same thing. But there were the times when Bill would send me something. Most, which comes to mind at this point, was when he sent me the image of the infant baby child.
Yes.
I could not see that at all for weeks. I kept looking at it, and he had to actually do an awkward drawing to show me exactly what he was looking at. And then I just about fell out of the chair when I saw what
he was saying. It's a little like me looking at this tiger, and I see an angel.
Right. Well, this is a traditional... exercise that has been done with other images such as this, and it is legitimate for the creator to guide the viewer to show them what they're supposed to be looking for.
Okay, well, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going first of all to West of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
I have a question about the image and relative to Bigfoot also. I'm a semi-retired physician and an explorer, and I encountered, when I first went to Honduras in 74, Ciudad del Blanco, the original first capital of the Mayan Empire, which was abandoned long before the 900s. It was about 846. And they went up from there into Santa Rosa Copan and made that their capital. Now, in Ciudad del Blanco, we have ancient tombs, four huge sarcophagi, and a lot of stela and huge artifacts and many things. My associate, Dr. Ramiro Gonzalez, when he was a young man, amassed a large amount of this treasure with his father, Generalissimo Ramon Gonzalez, and they hid it in a cave. And they found... in with this collection, a lot of artifacts which seem to be extraterrestrial in origin and in manifest. They also found statues to substantiate their belief, their family belief, in Sisimiti, which is the Spanish word in Honduras for Bigfoot. And they have an Iganti, which is 9 foot. Apparently, there are polymorphs polymorphic forms of them. And then they have the Ulaks. In the Miskito language, they call them Ulawas. I own the Ulawas Valley with Dr. Ramon Gonzalez and his family there. It's kind of a joint venture. It's a huge valley with gold and a lot of other treasures there. Anyhow, we have the Denuncio on it, and it's 3 days forced march journey from Catacamas in Olancho, the biggest state of Honduras. Now, there we found all these artifacts. We see them very clearly in the public plaza in Santa Rosa Copan, where the spaceman is seated and the fire is coming down underneath him. And the same motif is found again in Tikal in Guatemala. And also in Belize, I have some business interests, and I've explored there and have found that same motif on Stella there. My question is...
Excuse me, are you talking about the falling god?
Yes, the falling god.
Right, okay.
Okay, and my question is there a relationship between this space being, either human going up or coming down, as well as the Sisimiti? Because the bones have been found. We have a cave there that's legendary in this one village called La Bodega off the Patuca River. And this is where the bones are reposed in a cave. There's only a few people that know about it. I'm one of them. And I intend to go back there and get those bones. At any rate, there are numerous hundreds of villages up and down the Patuca and Wyambri and Juticalpa rivers where the natives have sighted CPCPs. This is the Littlefoot. They're about 28 inches tall. One was captured near Santa Rosa Copan, and my associate, Don Thomas Corbello Holmes, which spoke eight languages before he died at age of 92. He was calling for me. I was still back in the States, and I got the message 2 weeks late. They found a CPCP. It was wrapped up in barbed wire and witnessed by the chief of police, the military commandant there for Santa Rosa Copan, and the leading citizens. And they said, mono feo, sucio, botolo. So they threw it over the city wall, and it smelled. It had a foul odor to it. And it was eaten by dogs in the night. And someone said, well, let's get a hold of Don Thomas. And they did, but it was evidence gone. But there are many people that could swear to the affidavits of that specimen. And it had a humanoid face, humanoid hands, very hairy, but just a little foot. They're called CPCPs. They're found in that province.
Are they all over the place out there?
They're all over that one region of Honduras that borders the El Salvador border and up into the Guatemala border.
Huh.
And they travel in large troops. They're gregarious. They're not like the Bigfoot or the Sisimiti. Also, Dr. Gonzalez, when he was a young man, I think he was about to go to medical school, his father... brought back a girl from the mountains from another really remote village beyond La Concepcion in Olancho. And the woman was taken off by one of the Ulaks, one of the big guys, and had a baby with him. And the baby was brought back over a year later. She escaped. She brought the baby with her, but she was hysterical and deranged, and she was treated by the local people. She eventually regained her sanity, but the baby died for lack of care. And this is a well-documented incident there in Catacamas.
Well, gentlemen, any reaction to this?
I'm not sure what to make of it. I know that the Bigfoot legend of the Indians is spread out through the Americas and also in Asia and far east, and also in Russia. This is the first I've heard of the little feet.
Yeah, that was pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows what those things might be?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for that call. And it does tell you one thing. On this planet, on Mars, there are still some very strange, unexplained things. And I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of these things. First time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good evening, Jerry.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I've been trying to get through with this one for a couple years now. There's an artifact on Mars that everyone seems to have missed. And the last time I was on Enterprise mission, the pics are still there down towards the bottom somewhere.
Okay.
But you remember couple of years ago when Richard presented us with a pair of pictures as proof that those, shall we say, Nimrods of Nemesis over at NASA were trying to hide things from us?
Yes.
Well, you can look at those and tilt your head to the left, or you can simply rotate the pictures so that the right side is down.
Okay.
And in the new bottom center area, you'll see what I begin to think of as old Baldy. Looks for all the world like a bald guy with big eyes to handle the dimmer light and a beard. A much, much more human-looking face on Mars.
You've got some human-looking faces in the book, gentlemen, George and William, don't you?
The Viking looks very human.
Well, you've also got a Buddha picture in there.
That's right, yes.
He looks very human.
That's on the front cover, actually. Just in the bottom right-hand corner.
Right, but many of them are very zoomorphic.
If you showed these pictures to 100 people, would you get 40 different things and 20 different things? What do you think the number would be?
Well, from our experience with doing a few conventions and, talking with people, most people that are looking at the book can see the images readily. We really haven't experienced anyone.
Are they the same images, though?
Cross-eyed and going, what are you looking at?
I mean, do they see similar images or do they see other images? Like, again, you see tigers, I see an angel.
Right. We've never had that response. That's pretty drastic.
Yeah, it is. But I wish I could show this right now and just get a quick poll to that.
Right.
But we cannot. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes.
George and William. My name is Carrie. I'm calling from Western North Carolina.
Hi,
and
Carrie.
I want to throw out a quick hypothesis to all of you and to Mr. Hoagland, too, if he is listening. To me, this kind of ties in with a lot of topics you've talked about on the show, the lost city of Atlantis. You had brought up the possibility that perhaps the Atlanteans had come from Mars. I think that's a possibility that maybe their planet was dying and that they had come here. They had the advanced technology. It also ties in with the weather manipulation. Maybe they had some sort of advanced technology to where they could take that a step farther, kind of like the Star Trek movie where they had the Genesis probe and they shot it into the planet and it became a living planet. It just seems to tie into so many things. And as to the question of why would the government not want us to know about this, I think it is because it would challenge our fundamental religious beliefs and it would throw basically everything in the Bible out the window. And I think that is the main reason a lot of these things are kept secret. And I'm going to get off so that I can hear your response. But I just want to know what you think of that idea and those possibilities.
All right, why are these things kept secret? William, George?
Well, it's possible that there could be a number of reasons, but as Richard Hoagland has pointed out in the past, that back in the 1950s, President Eisenhower brought together a group, Brookings Institute, to try to determine, what would be their action if they were to find extraterrestrial artifacts in space or on another planet, since they were going to begin venturing out in the 1950s and 60s into space. And the panel, which included Margaret Mead, decided that it would be best kept secret from the general population because they thought that this might, that our psyche was so fragile that our society couldn't handle this information and our society would crumble, which to me is a little insane, but that's what the Brookings Institute decided. And possibly they're sticking to that.
See, I don't think society would crumble, but I do think society would become a little more unruly than it might already be. And I think that's their main concern. I don't think they can control the masses if we truly believed and understood about the possibilities of life elsewhere. I think,
George,
go ahead.
I don't think it's our culture that the government was worried about it. It was probably other cultures and other fanatical religious-based groups that were the danger. I think the United States public is probably more open to researching this kind of thing than other groups.
All right, let's go back to some more calls.
George, just one more thing.
Sure.
The lady was asking about the possibility that Mars had a civilization.
Yes.
That their planet died. The word Nephilim in the Bible was referring to another culture or another race. And one definition of that word is giants. And I don't know if that's correct or not, but it's used quite often by religious scholars. Now, if a race developed on Mars, they would have to be larger just because of the gravity and whatnot. They would probably be much larger than us. And so that is, I guess, a possibility.
East of the Rockies, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Albert from Cleveland. How you doing?
Good, Albert. Thank you.
Good. I have a question for your guest and you. I'm just curious. I'm wondering if you guys heard of the Bible verse, chapter 1, Ezekiel, from the Bible, talks about the discs and the angels.
Sure. I have. I'm sure you two have as well.
Yeah,
sure.
And then Elijah and the whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering your opinion on that, if we thought it was angels or aliens. And then I want to know both your opinions on whether you believe that world religion came from extraterrestrials and contrast the religion and teachings of Jesus Christ in the Holy Bible. I'll listen on the phone.
Okay, very good. In terms of Ezekiel, I have always believed that what people witnessed was a flying machine of some sort. Well, I can't say it was alien, but I do believe it was a flying machine. How about you, George?
Yeah, the description in the Bible is pretty convincing that it's some type of machine. That would just, my uneducated opinion,
sure,
just by what I'm reading.
William?
I would agree. I think that back in those days, there were no machines. So when a person was confronted with something like that, they would have to describe it in the only means that they knew how. And a burning bush and those sorts of things would probably fit.
Do you think some of the things we're talking about tonight, things on Mars, had any effect at all with our religion on this planet today?
Well, I think that my opinions are based a lot on, from what I've read of Zachariah Sitchin's work, and to me it seems to fit quite well with what we've been finding on Mars, and the fact that the term gods, the term Elohim,
mm-hmm,
in the Bible actually is a plural word and means deities. And over the course of time, that somehow got translated into a single deity. But I think that the religion of the Hebrews developed out of Egypt when they left Egypt. They sort of designed their own theology, and that's how their religion evolved. And of course, Christianity and Islam developed from that.
All right. When we come back, we'll take final phone calls and ask the question, of course, that was just asked, if extraterrestrials were the gods. Tomorrow night on our StreamLink chat, Lloyd Pye, the Star Child researcher, is our expected guest. So make sure you're part of that. And then our guest for Coast to Coast will be Charles Pellegrino, sharing some supernatural stories. So get ready for that. And we'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls with our guests, George Haas and William Saunders on Coast to Coast AM. We've got final phone calls with our guest, George Haas, William Saunders, the book, The Cydonia Codex. George, William, if you had a chance to go to a NASA news conference and talk to Mike Griffin, the new NASA head, What would you tell him? What would you ask him? You, William, you go first.
Well, I would, I would say take a look at what we found and what are your thoughts? I would also ask him why they never did any intensive or even some research onto the face after the 1998 Mars Global Surveyor image, which definitely showed that there was something artificial about that structure. Why they just ignored it and stuck to their guns that it was just a pile of rocks.
How about you, George?
Well, my question would be, why did they invite Linda Shelley to speak before NASA, and what exactly did she tell them behind closed doors? Because it appears that NASA knows probably more than Bill and I do.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. I think, wouldn't you love to be a little fly on a wall in one of those rooms?
Or a little gnat.
A little gnat with a little camera on you. Let's go back to the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Denver. My name's Marianne, and I'm going to tie this all up for you guys.
Oh, I hope so.
So exciting.
Sure.
Super. Well, unlike that lady who thought it would destroy everyone's beliefs, in fact, and the Bible has the whole answer to it, chapter 12 of Revelations, the Old Testament, the Jews were told, the Jews told all the other pagan religions that their God said to them, you will be my people and I will be your God. And then in the New Testament, Jesus dies as the final blood sacrifice, the lamb suffered for all of mankind. And then in the 1500s, a great sign appeared in Tepeyac on the hill. A lady clothed with the sun and standing on the moon and flying on eagle's wings appeared to a Mayan Indian who had been converted by the Catholic monks. And she left this sign on his cloak, and she converted 9 million of those Indians who understood that what they were looking at was an Indian princess standing in front of Quetzalcoatl, and she is pregnant, looking down in humble submission to her stomach where her baby is. The Savior had been prophesied would come to the Mayans, and they knew that was the end of their religion. And her dress shows the topographic map of Mexico, and she's the mother of God, and it's all right there, and it's fascinating.
Who wants that? All right, let's see if one of the two want to react to that.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and listen. Thanks.
Okay. Who wants it? George, William?
Well, that could relate to the image that we were looking at earlier with the inverted face on Mars. The figure at the bottom is the Lady of the Jade Skirt. Not only do all of these pictographic images in the inverted face image relate to Egyptian mythology, in the book we also discuss the parallels between each of these symbols and what they represent, basically the same idea in Mesoamerica. But that tri-leaf symbol on the forehead, when that's inverted, it makes up the skirt. That's the Lady of the Jade Skirt. And that's the woman that she's basically talking about that's mentioned in the Revelation story.
Well, you know what? There is no way all of these things could be just natural. Some of them maybe, and you look at it and you go, hey, that's interesting, but not as many as you have pointed out tonight. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Chuck. I'm calling from Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C.
Sure, Chuck. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I remember watching years ago the show In Search Of with the host Leonard Nimoy, and they showed a outer space rock with a cross-section cut and embedded in that rock in space with an alien type of...
I think I lost you. Yeah, we did. Faded out right at the end. I do not know the direction he was going to take that, guys. So,
Well, I think he's talking about that famous... they thought it was a meteorite or a rock, and it seemed to have this remnant of what looked to be an ancient mechanical generator or something in the stone. I recalled seeing that program.
Did that make you marvel?
At the time, I guess that was in the late 70s when that program was on.
International Line, where are you calling from? Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, where are you?
Ontario.
Okay, go ahead.
It's more or less my theory. You know how we were saying we want to get to Mars? Like, people want to land once again on there? What if we were once already there, and our God was, say, aliens, and we were just a science project, and we messed up, piling it up, and they sent what was left of us here to Earth, and now that's why that those figures and things are there.
A science project went awry, no doubt, huh?
Yeah, like, we were, like, say, like an ant farm. They gave us God, say, like, an ant farm has a queen, something for us to follow. But we didn't make it there. We destroyed that planet, and they put it, we came to Earth now, and we're doing the same to this.
Well, that's a possibility. Possibility indeed.
Because it's dead. Well, the planet looks dead. And it's pretty much what's on Mars is kind of like what's Egypt.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Do you gentlemen both think the planet is dead at this point?
Well, I don't think it's completely dead. I think that there is signs that there could be even algae or lichen growth at during the springtime when the ice caps melt. Would they are getting methane signatures over that area, which indicates there could be life, but there also could be life underground. I mean, the people who built these structures, there could still be people there on Mars living underground because it would be warm and there would be liquid water underground, and that's always a possibility. As far as his theory of us being a science project, it reminds me of a fellow at the X conference, and his name slips my mind at the moment, but he said in regards to why don't the aliens come down and reveal themselves, he said, because we're the best soap opera going.
You may be right about that. Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. Hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, and where are you?
This is Ryan Schaefer in Los Angeles.
Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hi. I have the idea that the face seems like a little more like you were saying, like a cloud formation that could be interpreted in many ways. But the pyramids in the region seem more measurable with the straight edges and whatnot. And that maybe we were just subconsciously attracted to that area and the face stuck out. And then a second question they can or cannot answer is if they have any comment on the crop circle that seems that happened a few years ago in England that seems to mimic the face on Mars.
All right, gentlemen, crop circles and the face.
I don't know much about crop circles. I've seen a lot of the images on Linda Moulton Howe's website.
Right.
I guess he's talking about the image that looked like a face that was woven into the wheat.
It looked like a little alien face.
Right. Some of the geometric patterns that's produced in this wheat are phenomenal, but I don't have a clue if they're, you know, made by, you know, guys out in the woods with planks and ropes, or they're made by aliens.
All right, a few more phone calls, and that'll be just about it for tonight. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, that was too quick. You got me just as soon as I got through talking with
Tom. Surprise you. I hit the wrong line. Let me put you back on hold. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
This is Mike. I'm calling from Nashville. And, you know, every time I listen to the show and this subject is brought up a lot with Hoagland and everything, I can't ever help but just to recall that, you know, Michio Kaku talks about the different classifications of civilizations, 0, 1, 2, and 3.
Three.
Where, you know, 0, you use things of your own planet, and 1, you know, of your sun, and 2 of your solar system, 3 of your, or 2 of your galaxy, and 3 of the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's how you advance. And, he always put a caveat in there that very few people get from 0 to 1. Which Earth is still in the process of 0 to 1 right now. I mean, we've done the atom, but we haven't really, you know, utilized the power of the sun and the wind and all of the natural things that are here for us to the extent that it's economical for us. And we're talking about, again, maybe going back to the nukes and with the reactors and everything, and then God only knows what would go for that. We're totally depleting our you know, our fossil fuels and all that. You know, I'm kind of like a lot of people. I think we're at an end point on that. I know you don't, George. I know your theory on that, but
Mr. Optimist here.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being an optimist. You know, we need more of them too. But I just wonder if you know, possibly like you know, you take Mars and many other worlds out there where possibly some of the species from, say, a class 2 of civilization or a class 3 maybe was trying to teach something, you know, and take care of the planet and all that, and Mars didn't achieve that. And so, you know, here comes Earth. That still has an atmosphere. Another thing, you know, we notice a lot of the things that we find here on Earth are above the tree line at 14,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I often wonder if that is, you know, maybe because they need the thinner atmosphere. I don't know whether gravity is any less at that height. I wouldn't think it would be. But there are a lot of petroglyphs and you know, with the thing with you know, on the plains of Nazca down there in Venezuela.
Yes.
There's been so many things in the high mountains that have been discovered that seem to be of the hieroglyphics and everything that are now being discovered maybe on other worlds and all. And
well, Machu Picchu's on top of a mountain.
Yeah, right. Of course, underground is one thing, but maybe way above there where, you know, there are unexplored mountains just as much as there's unexplored seas and under the earth. And especially in the Amazon and deepest, darkest Africa and South America and all, in the Azores.
Do you think we have underground civilizations here, Mike, on this planet?
Well, I think possibly if they were here, that would be the place to be. If you notice, a lot of us now, when we're thinking of all of this disasters coming along with terrorism and all that, there's people actually buying old missile silos and all of that. You go to a cave, George. You know, we're thinking about going underground. And, you know, you do have at least a pristine environment down there.
Well, you don't know. You haven't seen my cave.
Where the Budweiser used to store their old...
yeah, that's where I'm holed out, right? In St. Louis.
Refrigeration. But, you know, I think that if nothing else that we gather from this, we get the message that maybe let's start saving our planet. And doing like the Indians used to do and, you know, use what we need but put back what we didn't use and quit wasting so much. I think that's the cardinal sin for the planet as a race on this mud ball.
What do you guys think about all this?
Well, it's not thoughtful to waste our resources.
Not
I don't know if it has
all.
Anything to do with the structures that we're finding on Mars.
There could be some similarities, though, I think. Do you think that there are inhabitants still on Mars? Maybe they're underground?
Yeah,
I don't think so, because I really don't see any evidence of any movement on the planet or any ongoing construction or building.
On top.
Right.
But maybe deep within.
But then we'd have no...
Maybe they had to do that somehow.
Right, but we'd have no way of knowing.
No, that's true. What about you, George?
I'm George.
Oh, what about you, William?
Well, I think it's a possibility. We're taking still photographs, so you wouldn't necessarily see any movement. But there is evidence that of trails and pathways or roadways a bit archaic, but leading to some of these structures. So it is possible that... there could be remnants of civilization living underground, but I don't think we'll know that until we go there.
Well, I hope that's sooner than later. What do you think, 20 years?
I don't think we're going to go there in our lifetime the way the space program...
It's unfortunate. I think we could, technologically, if we put our act together.
Well, George, could you imagine in the early 1600s if they approached, you know, coming to the New World the way NASA approaches, you know, the space shuttle?
They'd never get to the New World.
Now, as soon as they, you know, they lost a few people in a boat that sunk, you know, they would stop building ships. it's like if we want to go to space, you know, we have to be prepared to make sacrifices. I mean, if we want to go there, I don't think that Columbus would have ever made it across the water the way NASA's running their research program.
Okay, for you, William, one wish. You can get it done with regards to anything in the space program or what you've been working on. One wish, what would it be?
I really don't know. I really don't know. I guess...
You're going to give up that one wish?
I'd have to think about it, I think. But I definitely would like color photographs of Cydonia.
How about you, George?
That's what I would go for, to see what these structures are made out of. Because I have some theories that the face on Mars, the humanoid side, is a totally different material than the feline side. The whole surface appears to me in the newer 2001 image to be very compartmentalized, like pieces of jade on the feline side, whereas the humanoid side is very reflective, like a metallic type of material.
Would you two go to Mars if you could get back safely, you think, if you had that kind of confidence?
Oh, yeah.
I told my wife I'll leave tomorrow.
You would. I would go, too. I would broadcast the whole trip.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Of course, we'd have to broadcast about Mars for the whole trip, but
I would go for it. And we have to bring Richard Hoagland with us.
In that case, I'm not sure I'd want to go. No, I'm kidding. Only kidding, Richard. Only kidding. Hey, the book is called The Cydonia Codex. Available where now?
Wherever books are sold.
Well, that's
it's available
a lot of spots.
Through our publisher at NorthAtlanticBooks.com. If you want to send in $18.95 for a signed copy of the book, you can send it to the Cydonia Institute at P.O. Box 1032 Jackson, New Jersey. Zip code is 08527. The book's also available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble.
Very good. Gentlemen, George, William, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having us, George.
Thanks Likewise. For inviting us, George.
Absolutely. Good research, by the way, into the Cydonia Codex. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.